hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning. How are things?
Things are fantastic today for a million different reasons.
Cool.
One, this is our first idiotic of the new year. Congratulations to us. I'll drink to that.
Yeah. Cheers.
Two is our fantastic guest today, the amazing and wonderful Brian Fabio. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Very, very cool to have you. Chris, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about video. But
we always talk about video. It's a popular thing.
It comes up once in a while, doesn't it? It's kind of a thing. It's kind of a thing. So, like you mentioned, we've got Brian with us today. Maybe we'll give Brian a chance to introduce himself, and that might get us started.
Sure.
Let's do that.
I'm excited to be here. And just for everyone that realizes it, every year since 2014 has been the year of video. So this is also the year of video 2019. But don't worry, every other year has been the year of video as well. So we're just in that, we're in a span of years of video. Excited to be here. Brian Fanzo. I'm the founder of iSocial Fans. My background quickly, just kind of where I came from. I'm a computer science major that kind of fell in love with change. I started to work for the Department of Defense in cybersecurity. I ran a team of training and learning development developers around cybersecurity tools. We trained four courses a week every single week for about 4 years around out of the Pentagon. I've traveled to 74 countries, 3 trips to Iraq, 2 to Afghanistan. Every U.S. military base outside of the United States, I've been to training on cybersecurity. I left there and I actually got the opportunity to work for Brent at IO Data Centers doing training and then morphing that into a little bit of marketing, a little bit of evangelist role. And for the last 5 years or so, 4.5 years, I've been running my own kind of consulting and keynote speaking business. I'm now, majority of my income comes from public speaking. So I do about 90% public speaking, and I host 2 podcasts as well as some one-off consulting. But my big thing is helping people embrace change, helping people kind of tell their story, get their voice out there. And video, in my opinion, is the great equalizer. It's the best way to make that happen. So always a pleasure to talk any of those and all that. And video for me changed so much of my business and my life that it's kind of an easy topic for me to go to. And I think everyone can kind of relate to that as well.
So when you were doing all of that training work, both of the Department of Defense and then at the IO group, et cetera, were you doing a lot of video back then already?
We were, surprisingly enough. Yeah. We were doing a lot of video back then early on. I think, one of the things that we were trying to do was scale, right? I think the hardest thing is scale, right? And it's not just really using video for video's sake, but like, what role does video play? And Brent and I remember, right when I had started, I was maybe 2 weeks in, we were already going over, okay, what kind of equipment can we get to start this to prove to our executives that video is important in training? And then what kind of video would be our dream video studio, our dream video training? But I remember even the very first time I went to Iraq, I came back and the Iraq training went amazing. But of course, it is Iraq. It was the war zone. It wasn't easy to get in. I had to travel with 30 military grade laptops. I flew in with Pelican cases, had to connect them in. And I remember we recorded kind of the course and we were trying to figure that out. But I can tell you a lot of the video pieces about video to me is the technology's been there for a while. I think it's the mindset of our consumers. It's the mindset of our trainers. It's the mindset of a student that we have to figure out how to make that work. And it was way too early then. I think it was even a little too early when Brent and I were doing that at IO, where we were doing some really innovative online training, but we hadn't had an audience that said, oh, I can learn complement what I do offline. And I think that's where we're at now. I think we're finally at now where, I like to say I went to YouTube University. Like I went to an undergrad, but I mean, the stuff I learned and I graduated in 2003, the stuff I learned in 2003 doesn't really relate too much to stuff I'm doing now. And most of the stuff I've learned now, I've learned through YouTube or through the training courses that I've signed up for. So I think we finally are reaching a point where today's consumers have caught up with the video technology that's available. Hmm.
So what were some of the, I guess, some of the ways that you were hoping back in the day and that you're starting to see now that that video really is starting to actually work and be successful for us in the training world?
You know, I think the thing with video, I think it's, you know, one of the biggest pieces, I believe, especially, you know, beyond even marketing, is having video where you're talking with people, not talking at people, right? The TV is where you talk at people. The video we create in this world, we're talking with people. And the hard part with that is you have to have good connection. You have to have people that are dialed in. You have to have people that are paying attention. You can't be just one of the 30 tabs across a browser, you know, and someone's listening in the background. But you also have to be, you have to work your, as yourself. Like one of the things that I remember Brent and I were really trying hard to do was, you know, at IO was if we were on video and we had a live classroom as well, to treat both of those students equally, right? When someone asked a question in the audience versus someone that asked one through the video chat, we would treat those, you know, you would weight those the same. But getting someone that's doing it not in the classroom, it's intimidating, you know, and that's the thing about video. Like, I think video is scary for so many. It's also scary to get started. That's where press the damn button comes from. For me, it's like, hey, you just got to try video, and then all of a sudden the video ball starts rolling. I mean, I'm sure Brent, you could even attest to, like, when I was trying to get Brent to do more video early on, this is right when we were started, Brent's like, well, I love training when I'm doing video, but I'm not too sure about this video where we're talking head video. And now Brent does these on a weekly basis. So I think it's that was one of the ones, like having conversational type video. The other piece of it was video kind of Q&A, right? Like, because when you get someone asking a question, you know, I played semi-professional poker. I have my background. I love like nonverbal cues, and I love the ability what we have in video gives us all of these things that we don't get in plain text. But you want someone to ask a question this way because they can add context. You can see how passionate or happy they are. It's really easy to hide behind a keyboard and ask questions and be kind of like the, but if you have to get on video and look somebody in their digital eyeballs, it's a whole different game. And those were some of the things we were trying to do. It was a lot harder than we kind of realized. We had data centers in different cities across the United States, and we had one group that was really good at asking video. And we had one group that would like sit as far away from the video as humanly possible. And like, you're like, we can't hear you. And they're like, we know, like it's that delicate balance. So I think that's part of what we were, you know, really trying to make it happen. I think that's that balance, right? I think and this is one of my sayings, and it works well for video, but I use it in social media. I always said social media will never replace a handshake. But social media, if you do it well, turns handshakes into hugs and gives you more abilities to have handshakes. And I think video, yes, it's very, very warm hugging. I think video is that same way with training, right? If it's not going to replace an offline training, but it makes it supplements, it makes offline training, you know, that much better. And there's ways to kind of scale and grow. But I think we're still, you know, we're still in this world now where we have to get the ball rolling, and there has to be ways, you know, the technology was ahead of the times, and now we have to get the technology back up with kind of the mindset that we have going on today.
So just to, I guess for clarification, partly it sounds like what you're talking about is actually the use of video in a live training session, not just recording videos a la YouTube or info pieces, etc.
Yeah. And we did both of them. I think for us, it was really trying to take video to the next level, right? Rather than having the canned produced video that we were kind of capturing, like how do we get people to interact during a session, or how do we have, I think we must have created, I mean, we created so much video that we had a lot of video that was produced, but we also had live elements, right? So you could watch for a day, and then we would interact live as well. So I think those are kind of that balance. I'm a big believer in, I think live complements produced video. I believe great produced video needs live video to amplify and connect and make it more relatable. But I'm definitely, you need both in almost all cases, and marketing's no different than training when you look at you know, the value of video.
Mm-hmm. Well, for sure. Go ahead, Brent. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was just going to say, you've got a lot of great stats on where we're going with video. And we got a lot of numbers people in our community here hanging out in the chat. So I don't know if you've got the right in front of you, or I'm sure you talk about them all the time, so you probably have them all memorized. But, you know, what is some of the usage of video? What does that look like?
Yeah. So, I mean, so the big, I mean, the big one is the stat that I use all the time, is the Cisco Index report. And it says 81% of all internet traffic by 2020. So that's 1 year away, will be video. So 81% of all internet traffic will be video by 2020. And that's a big one, right? The other one, you know, the couple other stats that we were looking at from like a, from, especially from an online interaction, people are four times more likely to remember something they consume online if they consume it with a video component than if a than something that doesn't have video at all. Four times more likely, right? I mean, that's, that to me is a super powerful stat. And then the other one that is one of the ones that I absolutely love, when, you know, a lot of times people hire me and they say, Brian, I want to relate and connect with the millennial Gen Z generation, right? Like that, they want to go, hey, people under the age of 40, how do we connect with them? And this is one of the stats that I've also enjoyed kind of putting out there, is that 74% of those under the age of 40 trust people that they connect with online more so than their offline friends, right? And that, and part of that connection is through video, right? YouTubers are the most relatable and trustworthy connection with a younger generation, which is kind of scary, right? Because you're like, wait a second, like, how are they more relatable? But it's scary for us, and I include myself, right? I'm an older millennial. I call myself a pager wearing millennial, so I'm right on that cusp of, I had a pager, I know what a pager is. When I see a payphone, I've used one before, where there's most millennials look at a payphone and they can't figure out why those even existed, right? Like there's those kind of worlds. But when we think about these kind of things, it's foreign for us. But if there's a generation, and there's even a younger generation that's growing up now where everything was video, being on video full time, exposing things on video, consuming on video, is just natural and normal, where we are still the generation that was like, wait a second. Like, I mean, I'm very glad that Snapchat didn't exist in my, when I went to college, right? Like, I'm very glad that that was not the case. Like, yes, but there's a whole other generation that says, hey, it exists. It makes our life, quote unquote, better. You know, there's always good and bad, but I think that's one of the things you have to look forward is if, and this is something I always tell people, it's video for video's sake is where we're still in. We're gonna get into a place where video with a strategy is still improving. Like, marketing is really bad at that at the moment. I think a lot of people are just throwing really bad video out there because we know video is powerful. But the other piece of this whole thing that we have to think about is, it's not only video that we know now, but, you know, I don't think of video, like my daughters, I have younger daughters. My daughters, they treat a YouTube video that we watch on an Apple TV as credible as they, when I watch something on the regular TV, when I'm watching sports. Like, there is no difference between watching something in a YouTube digital space and watching something in kind of the TV space. And so that's a massive change for especially everyone that's out there today.
Yeah. There's a bit of a conversation happening in the chats, and let me just back up here. So Lita threw out a question. What are those stats, catching her own correction there. What do those stats mean for podcasts and blogs? So the value of video that you're citing there, I mean, what does that mean for things like podcasts and blogs?
So I believe we're living in the world today where we have to, and this is perfect for the training learning audience, because the learning audience has already got this, right? People learn and consume differently. Everybody can, we have visual learners, we have audio learners, we have readers. And for the longest time, for the last, I would say 7 or 8 years or so, we've been living in a world where we as the creators of content decided how people should consume content, right? Like, I'm a good blogger, I will blog. If people want to consume my content, they read my content. In this day and age, the consumer has the power. And I firmly believe you need to create content in multiple forms and let the audience decide how they consume it, not you, the creator. So if you have a blog, doing a complimentary video or maybe a weekly video series where you talk about what you blogged about and why you blogged about it is important. I record my podcast on live video on Facebook Live. I then strip out the audio and then I use the video and find my favorite 1 minute clip. And now that's my promotion for my podcast. So if you're a video consumer, you can watch this 1 minute clip and decide if you want to go listen on audio. And so I'm a big believer in that. For me personally, I've created almost 2000 videos now in 3 years. I mean, 2000 videos myself in 3 years. Funny. learn is podcasting. I listen to 12 podcasts a week, about 12 a week. I wouldn't say every week, but podcast. I don't watch much video. I am a podcast learner. That's just my nature. I learn best with that format. So I think as you move forward, you have to figure out, and I call this upcycling. How do you take your great content and sprinkle in all of these other types of components and video? I mean, it's amazing. If you have a blog, and you do a video where you talk about why you did the blog, the research you did, your inspiration behind it, not only does it drive more people to read your blog, but when someone's reading your blog, they now hear your voice. It becomes more relatable. It becomes more memorable. And so these are things, places where I think video doesn't replace blogging. Actually, I believe video is actually going to amplify blogging, because as more video comes out, it's harder to multitask. But you have to think of it that way. How can I reach a video-only consumer with my written blog? And then kind of vice versa, right? Like if you're only a video person, you have to have a blogging written component as well.
And I think that kind of ties into some of the notes that that Joe was throwing in, basically saying, what if you don't like, or it's not as practical to use video, which, I mean, you're basically suggesting the need to cover off multiple bases.
Well, and I think the other thing about video that's really something to remember, right? Video is powerful, but it doesn't always mean you have to be on the video yourself, right? So I'm a big believer in interviewing other people. Like if you interviewing other people and letting them talk about their story and how great you are is way better than you telling about us how great you are, right? And I think for so many, if you're scared about video, the great place to start is doing something like we're doing now, right? This is conversational. This is not, you're not a talking head. You know, part of the intimidation about video is that you're like, how do I carry the entire show? How am I because I'm the star. I'm the one that everyone's looking at. Well, why not bring in a second person, right? Why not interview someone where you're asking the questions over top of the camera? Like I always tell people, there's a camera on the front and there's a camera on the back of your phone. Don't be afraid to use video by using the camera on the back of your phone. And I think that's a great place to start. The weird part about video as well is that once you start, even if you're not on the video, once you start creating video and sharing video, you'll start to see comments and people think about you differently, or they'll connect with you a little deeper. And that gets you kind of excited about video. And the other thing to remember is your initial videos suck. Everything you do at the beginning sucks. It's just horrible. It's you're robotic. You're reading. You're looking down. You talk too fast. You're all over the place, right? Yeah, Brent can attest that. Like, and I think that it's one of those things that, you know, it took me a long while to get comfortable on video. I mean, way longer than I probably want to admit. But just remembering that as a thing, that's like, nobody is great at video. Like Gary Vaynerchuk is a popular entrepreneur, giant guy in social media. Go back and watch his videos at Wine Library TV when he was 35 years old. The guy was horrible. I mean, he didn't talk into the microphone. He has like the sweats. He's got armpit stains. He's twisting in his chair the entire time in like two of the videos. And you're like, Gary, stop. But this is a guy now that creates hundreds of videos a week, right? So everyone starts somewhere. And the other piece that I give people on when it comes to video, do not compare yourself to others that are great on video. Do not compare yourself to people that are on TV, right? Like if you want to find other people to compare with other people that are just starting off on video as well. I really get bothered. It gives me good business, because people will come to me and say, Brian, we've been watching a lot of iJustine's videos on YouTube, or we've been watching a lot. And I'm like, wait, she's been creating videos since 2009.
She's like, you're 9 years old or something.
Right. I know. Like, and I'm like, I was watching her CES video this morning, and I was just like, you can't compare yourself to people that have done it that way. You have to start somewhere. But you know, it's one of those things. Like I think a lot of times video is so intimidating because we assume we have to be as good as TV or as good as a great YouTuber. And I will argue some of the greatest video I've ever created were the videos where things had gone wrong, things weren't perfect, where maybe I was nervous, maybe I forgot where I was at, because people were like, oh, he's like me. He's just like me. Like, I do that. And it's amazing where that relatability on your video is sometimes more powerful than the polished produced video that you nail. So don't be afraid kind of in that arena to kind of compare yourself to people that are more like you, because it's it's so frustrating for me when you're comparing yourself to those elites, and it's very easy to do, but it's not going to help you any when you're creating video.
That's what people are talking about when they talk about authenticity, right? I mean, it's the willingness to be able to cut that kind of stuff loose and to be okay with it. And that does connect more than anything. I think more so these days, maybe people are starting to get used to it, but they're not expecting it, because you don't get that from regular TV. Everything is scripted and pre-produced and all of that. And so to just hear somebody talking or having a conversation like this, I think it really does pull people in. And from an instructional design standpoint, that's what we try to do, right? Everybody in the chat. I mean, it's like Gagne's first event of instruction, right? Get the learner's attention. And sometimes not being perfect is just the draw in that might work for you.
And I have two rules. Perfection's a fairy tale. Control is an illusion. You have to remember both of those, right? Perfection is a fairy tale. No video is going to be perfect. No thing. I mean, you're going to have bandwidth issues. Your lighting is going to be bad. Your audio might go in and out. Perfection's a fairy tale. If you were trying to create perfect video, guess who sees perfect video? Nobody, because your video is never perfect. You never put it out to the world. And that is the worst video of all time, because no one ever sees it. And then the control part of it is things will go wrong. You'll forget things. You wanted to do a 3-minute video and it was an 8-minute video. Well, guess what? Apparently that you had something to say. Be okay with that. Like, you cannot control some of these variables. And it's amazing for me where we want to control and we want it to be perfect. But then we ask people, who is a perfect person on video, or what is a perfect leader or a perfect brand? And you're like, well, nobody's perfect. I don't think anyone's perfect. I mean, Mother Teresa wouldn't say that she was perfect. I don't think any of us have to worry about trying to be perfect. And so that's kind of that other part about that when it comes to video, especially I think in the training world as well. Like, training, you want someone to, like, this is one of the chapters in my upcoming book, is I believe relatability is the future of marketing. And I will say relatability in training is everything, right? You want the instructor, you want to believe in them, but you also want them to you want to know that they know your pain points, right? That consumer says, hey, that person gets my problems and they're going to help me solve them. There is nothing better for that than for being human on video, right? If you are so polished and so produced on video, you are not relatable to your audience, to the person you're trying to train, because now they're even more scared, because they're like, not only did that person know more than me, but they're really good on video and they're dialed in and they don't say, they don't talk. I mean, look, I talk with my hands nonstop. I'm Italian. I can't stop doing it, right? But those are little things that when you do that, people, it lowers that bar. And I always say this: video shrinks the distance in the digital world, right? In the digital world, we're far away from people, right? We're all in different cities here, right? It's the distance online is far. Video shrinks it as long as you're willing to talk with people and you're willing to be human on video. And part of that is, and this is kind of one of those other secrets for people that are trying to be video, whenever I'm talking to video, when I'm creating a video myself, I do not look into the camera. I am talking to a person. There is a person that I'm thinking about that says, okay, this video is created for this person, right? It might be, this is for Erica. She is a social media manager. She loves the company she works for, but she doesn't get enough respect in her job. She wants to grow her personal brand. So when I click the button, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, okay, this is for Amanda. So I'm not looking at a camera. I'm looking at Amanda and I'm talking to Amanda. And it's something that to me really, really, really helps me. When people say, Brian, that was an awesome video. Like, I felt like you were talking directly to me. Well, I was, because the camera wasn't something that I was talking to. I was kind of connecting that thing. And that's a big step. Like, at the beginning, you're going to look at the camera and you see a camera. Eventually, you're going to look at the camera and you're going to see a person that you're talking to. And that's something that's really, really valuable.
That's a great tip.
Sorry, there's lots of chat about that, actually. A lot of reaction to that in the chat. So if you were, I mean, video is such a wide topic, but if you had a couple of things that you wanted to suggest to people to try to even get started, you know, from folks who aren't doing any video right now, what kind of sort of off the top of your head things would you throw out to people to start encouraging them to give it a whirl?
So I like kind of like twofold. So one of the things that I talk about is you can document video, you can document video and you can create video. And what I mean by document and create, right? Creating video is something that you have a strategy. You have a whole bunch of things around it, right? Like you have a plan. Like these are the five things I'm going to talk about. That is creating video, right? That is hammering out video. The other piece of this is really, it started with Snapchat. It's now formed into Instagram stories. It now lives in Facebook stories, but it's something that we in the learning and development community, I think it's something we have to embrace, right? It's this idea of bringing people along on a journey with you. And when I get on video, I feel like I'm bragging, or I'm blasting my message, and I'm yelling at people. And some people are, and let's face it, like even people that live right north of me in the place called the White House, because I live in Northern Virginia, they're not very good at talking with people, like right, like the people at Congress, people at the White House, like they, when they're on video, they're like blasting their message. But what I tell people on the document side is, don't tell people what to do. Share why you're doing what you do. And let them know how they can also come on this journey with you, right? Like this to me is extremely powerful. So I will tell people like document, like Instagram stories, like even if you don't have a big Instagram following, maybe you only have 5 followers on Instagram, get used to telling a story in kind of 15-second increments and kind of documenting your journey, documenting your life. Let's say you're creating a new module for one of your training courses. Why not give a like behind the scenes access and create video on that? Because what you're going to realize is that you kind of start feeling comfortable sharing stories in this manner. And people really get that. I mean, people really love behind the scenes. Like I want to know how the sausage is made. Right. And that's a big piece when it comes to video. So documenting and creating are two different ones. The other one that I think is really something that kind of gets people overwhelmed is if produced video, like if YouTube or produced video scares you, go live. Right? Go live. Because the thing about live video is the expectations of the consumer are so much different than a YouTube video, right? When you're watching a live video, it's if all of a sudden, like if the audio was coming, cutting in and out, or you didn't have audio when you start a video, or for those of us that were on Periscope or Meerkat when it started, every first video was of your feet. Because when you went live, you just pressed the button and you didn't realize the back camera was the first camera on. And you're like, oh my goodness, it's my feet. And you're looking for the button to turn the camera around and you're freaking out. But the thing about live that is really fun is that it's scary to press the damn button, right? But then you press it and you realize the people watching are okay with mistakes. They're okay with, you know, and they're going to help lead you different ways. Yeah, I really think live video like allows people to, It allows you, live video for me was everything. I mean, I can tell you YouTube still scares me to this day, right? It has to be polished. It has to be produced. I have to optimize it. I have to tag it. I have to have a thumbnail. I have to, you know, SEO value it. I have to do it with my other videos. I need to add a card in there. Oh my God. All of that overwhelms the heck out of me, right? But for me, live video is, you know what? I fire it up. I have the way that I do live video, just for those that are, I'm a big sticky note guy. So love sticky notes. I mean, my walls are sticky notes. Live video can be intimidating because of the amount of viewers. So one of my rules of thumb for anyone that's using live from your phone is that on the bottom of your phone, you're going to stick a sticky note right here on the bottom corner. Now you might be thinking, why would I do that? Or if you were doing Crowdcast right now, I would stick it right underneath my view. And what you're going to cover is you're going to cover the number of people that are watching live. Because when you first go live, all of a sudden you have like 13 people, and let's face it, it's usually your mom, your sister, someone that clicked on it accidentally, someone that doesn't know they're watching it, but you have 13 people and you get all excited. And then all of a sudden the number goes from 13 to 8 to 4. And your first live video, you're like, oh my God, what did I say wrong? Like, hello, is this thing on? And then all of a sudden the numbers spike and you're like, oh my God. So what I tell people is your first 20 live videos, cover the number of people that are watching that are live. No longer worry about how many people are live and just hammer out your best content. And then once you get used to live, you can use those numbers for your advantage in doing those things. But I also remember, you know, I'm a big believer in repurposing video, right? So if I go live and I talk for 35 minutes, I will chop up my favorite 5-minute clip. And that is now a LinkedIn video that I use on a regular basis, right? So and remember, like live is great. And this is the piece that I always have to caveat, right? Everyone here has probably seen a Facebook Live video, right? Their live video is great because anyone can go live. Most live video today sucks because anyone can go live, right? Like this, it's this weird world of like, just because you can press the button doesn't mean you should. But I don't, this is my trick. I always come up with five things that I want to cover on every live video. I stick the sticky note underneath, like I said, I'm a sticky note person, underneath the camera. And I just cover those five things. If it takes me 10 minutes or it takes me 5 minutes, I don't care either way. I cover those 5 minutes, five things. I don't script it out. I do five key points because no one wants you to read something live. And you also have to be willing to go with the flow. I mean, we're doing this on this show right now. I mean, if everyone that's watching this, this is a learning environment right now. We are allowing the comments that are coming. I see all the comments there. I see like Simon, I see Lisa, and I see Dana, I love Dana. Dana's a huge supporter of mine. She's been so amazing to me. And I love following their journey and everything they're doing. But for you're letting these comments, like, don't be afraid to let the comments dictate where you're going. Because the thing that I love most about live video, when you create regular video, you as the creator are deciding what's valuable. When you create live video, you allow the consumer to impact the direction of the video. And I can promise you, if you're getting one question in the chat, you're going to have 30 people on the replay that also have that same question, that same comment. And that's where these things go powerful. And so that's where I look at like live video. I think Mike asked a question about, you know, where do you recommend going live? Each platform is extremely different. You know, Facebook Live, think about it this way. Facebook Live, anyone who sees your Facebook Live, they already like you, they already trust you, they already know who you are, because they will not get a notification. They will not see your face. Facebook search sucks. No one searches for a live video. No one randomly, that just doesn't exist, right? So on Facebook Live, you have to know that your audience, and a majority of your audience is going to be on the desktop, right? So that's something to think about. Now, when you go to Instagram Live, which of course is open, owned by Facebook Live, it is the opposite. I love Instagram for one main reason. It is the only social network in the world where you can guarantee 99.9% of people consuming your content are doing it from a mobile device. 99.9. There's no other platform. I don't care what platform. So when you're doing an Instagram Live, you have to think about, okay, well, these people are mobile. So people are watching, you know, they have their phone on their desk. They're probably watching on mute because they're trying to decide if they should go for a cigarette break to listen to your content, right? Like that's kind of how it works in this world we're living in right now. So Instagram, you have to know it's a mobile consumer, right? I'm a big lover of Twitter. I believe Twitter is the unfiltered fire hose of conversations. If you want to reach new people, people that don't know you, don't like you, haven't heard of you, but might care about your topic, I think Periscope and live video or video on Twitter is really powerful. And then the last one, weirdly enough, I love LinkedIn video. LinkedIn video has grown my business massively. You can upload a video on LinkedIn. It's not live, but you can upload a video on LinkedIn that's under 10 minutes long, and it goes natively in the platform, and LinkedIn gives it a lot of love. And what I do is I treat the comments as if they're live comments on LinkedIn. So I turn my notifications on my phone on after I post a LinkedIn video. And as soon as I get a comment on a LinkedIn video, I reply within seconds. And it's amazing. You'll get people, because LinkedIn's one of those weird platforms where people usually come in once a week. So if you don't reply to a comment immediately on LinkedIn, no one's coming back to watch that content. So the platforms really, they each have a different value. I'm a big believer in, and this is something else when it comes to video that I didn't really talk about yet, but I believe in creating content where you're most comfortable first, and then going to where your audience is second. I think most people make this mistake. They will come to me and say, Brian, I have a huge audience on Facebook Live. I'm going to go live on Facebook Live. And they go live on Facebook Live and they're nervous and they're out of sorts. And I'm like, well, why did you use Facebook Live? Don't you like blogging first? They're like, yeah, but my audience is on Facebook Live. Why not write a great blog, post it to your website, and then after the blog is done and posted, then go live on your video, right? Like, use the where your audience is second, because it is intimidating. And if you can get comfortable telling your story where you're most comfortable, then when you go to where your audience is, your audience will thank you. And so those are kind of the things that I kind of go for when it comes to video on especially live across those platforms.
That's awesome. And Mike's throwing in his thanks for that feedback there too. A couple of other really neat comments in here. Eric's tossed in, you know, for scripted stuff, especially technical content, please read it out loud before you give it to the talent or say it yourself. Learned this the hard way and felt really bad for the narrator reading or recording my tongue twisters around diesel engine repair.
One of the things I like to do on that is I actually do voice to text for creating my scripts. So my, if I'm doing a script, I actually read the text into the voice, into the record, because then it's coming with my voice. Like I'm reading, I'm not typing it out in like a set. I'm like, wait, why is that sentence too long? So like I'll type it out and then I'll say, okay, I'm going to read this into my final produced version for a script. And you'll be amazed just reading the voice to text where like the little nuances come in and out that can really help out.
That's a great. Yep, I hadn't thought of that. It seems almost redundant, but I can totally see the value in just in reading what you've written out loud into a text to speech, and then hearing that back or seeing how that translates it is, yeah, that's a great tip.
Mm-hmm. I've had some cases where the only re-recordings for a professionally recorded were some technical terms. It's like, oh, we were so close, and yet you've got those. Oh, yeah. You know, those three words that are wrong because somebody isn't actually a practitioner in that particular area. Dan is throwing a comment into the questions. Long form content, 30 minutes or longer on YouTube. Is it effective in expanding community?
Ooh. So YouTube is one of those animals where it's amazing. YouTube, to me, is one of the greatest communities that are out there. But YouTube also requires amazing consistency. You need to be niched down and understand your audience. And it takes a long time to grow. My favorite YouTuber in the world, her name is Amy Landino. She used to go by Amy Schmantastic. If you just search Amy TV in YouTube, she does a lot of productivity and lifestyle tips. But she created her channel in 2010. It took her until about 2016 to get to 25,000 subscribers. It took her a year to get 100,000. Now in 1 year since then, she's now just hit 300,000. YouTube is one of those things that it takes so much consistency. I mean, actually, if I had to give any one big tip, consistency is the number one. And it's managing expectations. Like if you want to create a video every week, do it. But if every week scares the hell out of you, which it should, because that's a lot of content, maybe do every month, but do it every month. Like your audience is going to look for it. And that one time that you don't deliver when you tell them that you are going to deliver, it's over. You're done, right? But the other piece about this, and I'm so adamant, this is my soapbox for 2019, is that we need to leave the goldfish alone, right? We've always heard that today's consumer has the attention span of a goldfish. They can only pay attention for 9 seconds. Here's the truth. People have no time for crappy content. If your content is good, we have all day long. I will binge watch Game of Thrones like a boss. My favorite podcast in the world is Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard. It is an hour and 30 minutes long. I have not missed a single episode. I wait for it to come out on the day of it released. We are training ourselves. And this is that thing where the first couple seconds of your video will determine if someone sticks around, right? So doing things like captions are important. Like I have a trick with captions that I'll share here is that I often only do captions for the first 30 seconds of my video. And at the end of the 30 seconds, I actually do a caption that says, if you haven't decided to turn your audio on yet, you probably haven't found this content valuable. Because to me, if you're reading for more than 30 seconds, doing things like that, like kind of keep things fresh. But I think that those are places that you know, like the length of video really doesn't matter as much. Like you have to think of the platform too. Like, I mean, like I said, if it's a mobile consumer on Instagram, yeah. I mean, how many people have time to consume really long video on mobile? But I will tell you, I've seen YouTube stats where mobile consumption of YouTube videos for hours is possible, right? So that's a big piece of it. I've really noticed, like, you also have to understand the platform. Like a view on LinkedIn is different than a view on Facebook. I don't really care about vanity metrics. The stat that I care about the most, and it's something that I'm sure you guys care about here in this chat as well, is my favorite stat is repeat viewership. I want someone that comes back multiple times over a short-term period to consume and comment on a piece of content. Now, granted, I track that on an Excel spreadsheet because I'm that big of a geek that I will say, okay, for this month, I'm going to do 4 live videos and I'm going to write down every single usernames that commented on each video. And then I'm going to look at the correlation and say, how many people came back for video 2, video 3, video 4? How many watched all 4? How many watched 2 of the 4? And that's the number that matters, because when you think about it, when you relate and you connect so deeply, that is when things truly, the true value is. I don't care someone thumb stopped and then flipped through and that was a view. I want to know, who do I capture so much to come back for more? And the other piece about that is being consistent, right? Like we live in this world where notifications are all over the place. Like pick a time and do it at that certain time so someone can throw it on their calendar, because they're not going to, like, yes, you do an email blast. Yes, you post it on Twitter. You do a countdown on Instagram. Those are all great, but you're still pulling at like 13% of your audience. If you can just do a video and say every Monday at 4 p.m. or every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern time, that is where the magic happens. And that consistency of delivery, consistency of video, and those are things where if video isn't working for you, more than likely, those are where you're missing the mark. It has very little to do with what you're talking about.
Brian, this is awesome. And we're gonna wrap this up because we kind of like to let people go a little bit earlier before the top of the hour so they can get ready for their next meetings and whatnot, man. I mean, somebody already said it in the chat, but I agree 100%. I could sit here and chat with you all day, but I also know you're a busy guy and you've got meetings going on too. So I think that's a great way for us to end it today. Tell us a little bit about some of the stuff you've got going on and where people can reach out to you and get connected with you.
Sure. So, I speak around the world. I did 48 events last year. My goal is to do 60 this year. So I'm launching a brand new website with a new calendar component on my website by February 1st. So if you check out isocialfans.com, I'm pretty much almost in every city around the United States. And I do a couple, eight or nine international. I'm a big believer, I'm on every channel of social media because part of my job or what my belief is, I want to learn all of them so I can help you guys pick the right one. So I don't believe you need to be on every channel. I also don't believe you need to follow me on every channel. What I ask you to do is pick your favorite channel for consuming content and follow me there. You can search iSocialFans with a Z. That's my username on every channel. And then last but not least, my podcast is like kind of my baby. It's called FOMO Fans, FOMOFANZ. FOMO Fans. You can find it in any podcasting app, but I cure your fear of missing out around social media, around marketing, around entrepreneurship. Yeah, FOMO Fans. Search that in any of your of podcasting apps. I'm putting that out. Last year, I struggled to be consistent, to eat my own dog food or drink my own champagne. So this year, I'm being much more consistent on what dates I'm dropping. Once a week, every single week. I'm also rolling out some interview series on there as well. So check out that. And then my book, Press the Damn Button, which I see here. I've been talking about this book for 3 years, so it's time for me to press the damn button on my own book. I haven't picked a date for the release yet. I'm still working on a couple publishers, but I promise it'll be out by June 9th, which is my birthday, and I made that commitment to pick it out before June 9th. So you'll have it before then, but I appreciate being on the show. I always enjoy this community. I'm a learner at heart. I can tell you, the stuff that I do on social media, the stuff that I do on stage, so much of that comes from the training and learning mindset that I have. And it's, for me, I always say I like to educate, I like to inspire, and I like to motivate. And that's what I've done as a trainer, and that's what I try to do on stage. So love this community, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, it's been awesome. Thanks so much for joining us.
And I believe that means that's cue time for the...
Everybody dance.
This is how we like to close out a great show. Thanks again, Brian, so much. It's so cool to catch up with you. Next time you're in Phoenix, man, let me know. I'll buy you lunch or coffee or a beer or something.
And end of February, I'm speaking at B2B Summit in Scottsdale. I will message you.
All right. Definitely. Definitely. I owe you big time, man. Thank you so much.
Cheers, guys.
For being with us.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we'll catch you next week.
We will, for sure. This has been a great one. Welcome back to Idiotic in 2019.